This is a download from the BBC. For more information and our terms of use, go to bbc.co.uk/radio3.
Being an existential psychotherapist means being a philosopher who applies philosophical ideas and methods to the concrete challenges and realities of everyday human existence. As the writer Albert Camus put it, the only serious philosophical question is whether life is or is not worth living. Many people doubt the value and meaning of life, and this unbalances them and may throw them into distress or despair. Existential therapy seeks to clarify and illuminate a person's life in light of the big human questions, lifting them out of their darkness and confusion to a place from where they can see the whole picture and get a sense of perspective. Existential psychotherapy is the only established form of psychotherapy that's directly based in philosophy rather than in psychology or medicine. Its roots reach deeply, all the way back to the ancients, especially to Socrates. Existential therapy was officially founded at the beginning of the last century with the philosophy of Jaspers and the psychiatric practice of Ludwig Binswanger, Medard Boss and Viktor Frankl. Frankl, an Austrian, was inspired by his own life and work, firstly in suicide prevention and then interned in concentration camps, where he was sometimes able to work as a doctor. He noted that some people just gave up in these situations, while others kept a deep sense of life having meaning that got them through the madness and horror. Jaspers gave up his psychiatry training to become a philosopher. Boss and Binswanger looked to philosophy for new ways of tackling mental and emotional problems. They took the paradoxes and conflicts of their patients seriously and sought to deal with them more effectively. In the UK in the 60s and 70s, the movement of anti-psychiatry, spearheaded by R.D. Lang, attempted something similar. It created therapeutic communities which provided alternative living spaces for people who were struggling with their emotional survival and who didn't want to be consigned to mental hospitals or pumped full of medication. I came to the UK in 1977 to work with this movement. I lived and worked in one of these communities, immersing myself in people's problems and experimenting with alternative ways of approaching mental illness. Before I came to the UK to participate in this experiment, I trained and worked residentially in psychiatric hospitals in France for many years. Although born and raised in the Netherlands, I studied philosophy in Montpellier in France in the early 1970s. I became involved in psychotherapy training through my relationship with a French psychiatry student. My interest in psychoanalytic authors like Freud, Jung and Lacan didn't satisfy my search for a philosophical way to practice. As I joined my now psychiatrist husband in his work in various psychiatric settings, first with autistic children, then with young anorexic women, I was shocked. I found that many people, as soon as they became patients, lost their own voice and self-respect, almost giving up their agency and humanity as they became dependent on medical care and chemicals. It became essential to seek out places where this was not the case and where we could relate to those with mental and emotional problems in a more humane way. We chose to work and live in a revolutionary psychiatric hospital in the Massif Central, in the small town of Saint-Alban-Lozère, which was the birthplace of French social and community therapy. Here I was able to apply my philosophical knowledge to my work with individual patients and groups. Then I went back to university to qualify as a clinical psychologist, doing research on loneliness and attempted suicide. I wanted to develop a method to help people understand their shipwrecked lives better and realized that I needed to take an existential approach. My deep connection with existential ideas came from my early background in the Netherlands. I was born in The Hague some years after the end of the Second World War. My parents had joined the Theosophical Society, an organization that looked at the great world religions to try and make sense of spirituality in a more pluralistic way. When my primary school teacher asked everyone in our class to state their religion, I really was not sure what to say and went home to ask my parents. My dad suggested I tell my teacher that I was a heathen. This scandalized my mother, who thought I should call myself an atheist or an agnostic. I found these terms troublesome and deeply wanting, for I did not want to be defined by what I was not. I decided that I would keep searching, and this is how I found philosophy. I already had deep and secret beliefs of my own and wanted to commit my entire soul to something that was true and good and worthwhile, rather than stating I was an unbeliever or a doubter. I loved nature and freedom and fairness and kindness. The sunshine on the North Sea waves, the wind sweeping me along or challenging me on my bike through the dunes. And I loved going camping with my parents for 4 weeks each summer, trekking through Europe with little tents, meeting people from different countries, learning languages, and realizing how many different sorts of existence there were for each person to choose from. I learned to be resourceful and unafraid of others' opinions. I wanted to find out more about what was possible. Most of the year, though, we lived in a confined situation, in a tiny third-floor flat in the North Sea Dunes, at the southwest of The Hague. My elder sister and I shared a box room so compact that one of our beds had to be stored under the other in the daytime. But we knew we were lucky, because our parents had been in the war, and the stories they told us about it were harrowing. The Hague had been occupied by the Nazis for 5 years and was bombed regularly by the Allied forces. My father had been in hiding in a freezing loft in danger of his life. He'd contracted double pneumonia. My mother was a trainee nurse looking after children suffering from starvation, diphtheria, tetanus and tuberculosis. Our maternal grandparents had lost their home and all their possessions twice over, first bombed by the Germans and then by the Allies, when they had moved to Arnhem. My parents were deeply traumatized by it all and talked to us about it continuously during our early years. As a student in France, I read Flaubert and Proust and Rousseau and Verlaine and Valéry and so many others who inspired me. I became immersed in phenomenology, the science of consciousness, after reading Husserl and Heidegger. I was fortunate enough to study for my master's in philosophy with Michel Henry, an existential philosopher who was inspirational in the way in which he drew wisdom from controversy and who remained aloof from academic rivalries. He gave me the confidence to pursue my therapeutic practice as a form of applied philosophy. The defining idea of existential therapy is that it is philosophy in practice. There's no set picture of the human psyche and no essence of being. People create their lives out of what has been given to them and what they have managed to understand of life. Human life is a relatively brief experience, which starts with conception and ends in death, leaving each of us to make something meaningful out of what happens in between. To be free is to have choices, and to have choices means being anxious about making the right ones. Anxiety or angst is a core experience of living. In existential therapy, anxiety is not assumed to be a symptom of mental illness or dismissed as a weakness. As long as we are alive, rather than dead, energy flows in us. Whenever we take responsibility or take a new direction, we put energy into our actions, and this creates turbulence inside us, which we can experience as anxiety. Anxiety is the price we pay for making conscious choices. It calls us to ourselves. It is the shadow side of freedom. Learning to be anxious in the right way, as the Danish philosopher Kierkegaard put it, is learning the ultimate. The right way is to be keyed up enough to come to life, but not so tense that we become dysfunctional. Anxiety is distinct and different from fear. Anxiety is a generalized feeling of Unheimlichkeit, as Heidegger put it, a sense of not being at ease, not being at home in the world. Fear is something quite different. It has a concrete object and incites us to flee from this threatening and dangerous reality. If we flee from life and hide away in fear, we become disenfranchised and disconnected, unmotivated and despairing. People often refer to that as depression, but I would rather see it as decompression or suppression of our energy. Engagement and connection create meaning. Courage and action are therefore better remedies than avoidance, evasion, or medication. The application of these existential ideas to existential psychotherapy means that clients are not offered reassurance, but are encouraged to consider their anxiety as a valid starting point for the work that has to be done. They're helped to face facts and find resilience to make changes for the better by affirming their freedom and capacity for choice, always in open, fair-minded conversation, and with a view to exploring the consequences of choices with a careful weighing up of rights and duties. Philosophy can benefit all of us, not just psychotherapy clients. It encourages us to develop moral and existential principles for ourselves. Such ideas call us to live life to the full, making the most of the time we have got, unafraid of suffering, and not shirking from plumbing our own depth. This can allow us to release the passions we may have inadvertently locked away together with our fears. When I work with my clients, I aim to help them to understand their lives better, to regain their balance, their perspective, their sense of direction, and to find the meaning that they have lost or purloined, or perhaps never found in the first place. And hopefully, they will discover to their delight that times of crisis are moments for reflection rather than moments where we should rush into panicky action. They learn to thrive on anxiety and find their true depth when despairing or upset. People who are engaged with something of value always surprise themselves. They find new energy and purpose to engage with life in a new and wholehearted way. A calm and kind, quiet but searching dialogue is all it takes. In that process, they learn to recognize the contradictions and paradoxes of life, to face their troubles and solve dilemmas. They also learn to decide what is important and precious in life. I have done this job for over 40 years, and I continue to be amazed at people's resilience and intelligence in overcoming their problems, once they put their hearts and minds to it.